Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. FTX stole $8 billion from their customers. Here's a court presentation of their collapse. I really like this tweet thread with images showing all of the timeline, Binance tweeting about it, SBF resigning. Really nice to rethink of this event, but to me, the biggest fraud is this woman's face. So ugly, holy shit. This woman has had a harem of men, and it is stunning to consider that she is the top performing female in her category, having fucked hundreds of males in the Bahamas as part of her spree of sex, funded largely by the Bitcoin owners of this world who lost their Bitcoin at the FTX. Unbelievable. Ugly to that level, I didn't know it was possible. New guy says, Elon gonna tap that next. Someone observed on Twitter that I've had sex with more beautiful females than Elon Musk. And Elon Musk is a billionaire. And repeatedly has been inseminating very mid females. It's quite amazing when you consider this, especially when I consider my current girlfriend. She is 5 points above the average Elon Musk girlfriend. What's happening, Elon? You don't want to dedicate time to selection. Rodilacid says he did have Amber Heard, although she's crazy. I mean, she's crazy, and she's not a 10 out of 10 supermodel. She is just a beautiful woman. But, I mean, to be honest, her face is so marked in my mind. Her face that she was doing during the trial, where she looks like an angry woman, that I cannot see her as beautiful anymore. But I can acknowledge that objectively, she may be somewhat beautiful, but even with her, he didn't have a baby. And so, Elon, it's not just about the genes of intelligence. You need to make sure that the genes of intelligence pass into the next generation through the female line and that they have a nice presentation to them. Shamrock Shake says, maybe Elon has a certain psychological type. What I think is that Elon is discounting his selection capacities, and he's like, he's in a spray and pray mode because he knows he doesn't have much time. He has to travel across many corporations, across many countries to lead his corporations. And he just thinks he doesn't have the time to apply himself to a true selection pattern, which he could do with the amount of money he has. Raised Fist says, JF's girlfriends are crazy too. I don't know about the new one. Yes, my exes tend to be quite crazy. Let me tell you, I have the impression, although, you know, the craziness can reveal itself in the future, but I have the impression to have found a mentally healthy, super stable woman of true love. I don't know if I'm being deluded here. I mean, I've seen so many men get deluded that I am very cautious about calling out future outcomes. But up to now, she has been displaying rationality, love, logical approach, and a non-conflictual personality that I've never seen in woman. A whole mentality of we are together and we are facing the world together. I've never seen that in any woman before. My current girlfriend displays that a lot. Is it a fraud? Is it a CIA trap? We'll know for sure very soon. Stevie Wonder trying to give Mariah Carey the mic, and she just leaves him hanging. I didn't know about this video. Look at him. He's blind, okay? So he's going to reach for the mic and he's going to end it to Mariah Carey, but Mariah Carey is gone.
Yes, Mariah! I
can't even remark about what just happened. Does anybody realize that this is Stevie Wonder? Yeah.
Oh my God, she's talking about him, but she's disappeared from where he was supposed to hand her the mic. Some people are having fun around edits of the Putin interview. Lots of critique also, and lots of low-level critique I've seen on social media. People complaining about the length, people complaining about, he's talking about the history of his country. I wish we had presidents that can lay out a historical understanding of my country that I agree with. That would be beautiful. I don't have this. Apparently, Russians have this. And the idea that this is mockable is absolutely ridiculous. Imagine having a president of the U.S., that's able to tell you a narrative of the Civil War, of whatever happened hundreds of years ago, and that's capable of saying, yeah, that's what happened. And you're capable of agreeing with him. You're capable of, yeah, we're on the same side. We're on the same team. People are mocking Putin for having a deep understanding of Russian history. That is absolutely ridiculous. If you don't like long-form interviews, just go watch your TikTok clips or whatever. Charles Garrity says it was an interview for intellectuals. Yes, and there is some good edits. There is some good editing done on the interview.
So I was balls deep in that Colombiana Russian husky chick, and I'm about to liberate. She then does a blitzkrieg move on me and turns around, and I accidentally give her a pearl necklace. She tells me that she wanted to look at me and my piroski when I finish, and I'm like, are you for real? I gave her some tissues to clean that Stalingrad of a mess I made, and I grabbed the smoke. She didn't say anything at first, but then she looked at my Madex painting, and she was like, oh, that's crypto, right? The audacity of that chick, man, it's Bitcoin, bitch.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I said, she said. And I'm like, bitch, you done and all, but the exit is that way, go. She started crying. She turned around and said, if I can give her some corn for her sick grandma or something. I was like, woman, I've been holding for ages now, grinding and stacking, and now that the fucking BlackRock are buying my bags, you want me to sell? Do you even understand the geopolitical implications of them buying the corn? We front-run that shit for once, through blood and tears, carrying the boats to the shores of generational wealth. You think I'm just gonna give it up now? She called me some names, not worse from what the Pussy Riot have called me in the past, and she left. So, yeah, to answer your question, Tucker, I'm buying more Bitcoin every day.
Oh my God, that one made me laugh. It's fun to imagine Putin talking about crypto and Bitcoin like this. It didn't happen. Someone was telling me yesterday on comments that he believes that Putin is TRP-pilled because he talked about AI and genetics at the end, and genetic modifications at the end of the interview, but he was really talking about these two things as separate subjects. So I wouldn't say he's TRP-pilled, but definitely he was aware of the dangers of AI and the dangers of genetic editing as separate issues. But I don't think he's to the point of understanding that it's going to be both at the same time, assaulting the human race. Nuke from Persia says, Jeff, what's the most concise way to red pill someone about TRP? My usual plan is to introduce three IDs. One, genes may become phenotype by using, as an example, ants and or multicellular organisms. Two, same holds even if replicator differs, as in RNA-DNA case. Three, this happens because of gene editing. How do I show that three is true? I plan to use vaccines as an example as they reward genes favorable to vaccine technology by giving an evolutionary edge to the adopter. A quick normie way to prove that it's true. Of course, if you want to prove that it's true, I wrote the shortest book possible about this, 140 page, The Revolutionary Phenotype. But yeah, I get your question. It's important to have a narrative that can be compressed into very little space. And the normie-friendly way to prove that it's true is to go back to the ants, to the idea of ants that you've already introduced when you were talking about number one. You say there is you say there is a... Oh, I realize I forgot to announce the show tonight. So let me make sure that I announce the show on all platforms. There is something that's happening with ants, and the same is happening in a phenotypic revolution. It is the centralization of genetic control. So the way you can totally win a normie without having to go through the painful demonstration of the three problems of the phenotype is to say, ultimately, phenotypic revolutions happen to ants or they happen to humans based on one and only one thing, centralized control of genetics of the population. Now, for ants, how does that show up? For ants, it is the takeover of the queen. The sterile workers have become phenotypic because the queen controls their genes. TRP happens because the AI controls our genes. So the quickest way is to bring the AI, the queen sterile worker dichotomy, and say, yes, it just so happens that when you give up central control of your genes, you become a sterile worker. And that's true of sterile worker ants. It's true of sterile worker humans once we start dedicating our genes to a central control through AI. That is the quickest way, in my view. So you might want to work on your third point and introduce them to this. New guy says that will turn normies against AI, though. Well, isn't that the goal? If you want to lay out an anti-TRP discourse, you want them to be anti-AI. Now, eventually they could read the book and understand the subtleties and that, oh yeah, some AI are not dangerous, some AI are dangerous. But if you're looking at making a good first impression, I don't think it's that important to protect the part of AIs that may not be dangerous. I think the most important is to make a solid case that central control over genetics of any kind turns the civilization into a colony type of civilization. Disclose.tv says Boris Johnson calls Tucker Carlson a traitor for Vladimir Putin interview. I wrote on my time on my I wrote on my thumbnail, I see what you did there. Boris Johnson didn't really call Tucker Carlson a traitor in the sense that it is being quoted here. When you read the article that he wrote himself, Boris Johnson, he said that Tucker was a traitor to journalism. Now imagine how cucked you have to be this passive aggressive, because we all know what Boris Johnson is dog whistling here. He's dog whistling that Tucker should be treated as a traitor, which is a crime in many countries. you know, traitor to the government is a crime, sometimes punishable by death in some countries. He wants to say that Tucker should be criminally held as a traitor, and yet he doesn't quite say it. So instead he says a traitor to journalism. But there is nothing that Tucker has done that is an affront to journalism. To the contrary, he is putting a shine on this job that everyone hates journalism. Everyone hates journalists. But Tucker is becoming an exception because he has dared to do what other journalists have not wanted to do, which is give a fair hearing to Putin. That is all that his interview is, really. A hearing without counter lies. A hearing without the pressure of being so Western against him as to basically force him into a corner of having to debunk lies live in front of him. That is all that Tucker offered, an open platform, really. Dead Star says, what a meaningless worm of a man. Yeah, Boris Johnson is a constant disappointment. There was a time where, since he was all about Brexit, I was kind of favorable to him. But the more I get to learn about his stance, the more I see him as more of a gatekeeping agent, kind of a man of the elite who poses as non-elite on certain specific subjects. Boris Johnson, Putin's interview with his fawning stooge Tucker Carlson was straight out of Hitler's playbook. I pray Americans see through this unholy charade. When Tucker Carlson went to the Kremlin, he had a function well known to history. It was to be the stooge of the tyrant, the dictaphone to the dictator, and a traitor to journalism. Why is it that we always use this language toward Putin, but what about George Bush? What about all of the presidents before Donald Trump who have constantly done to nations that were much more distant than Ukraine is from Russia? The nations we have invaded across time were more distant than Ukraine, more foreign. We were there even more illegitimately than Russia is into Ukraine. And yet they never got called tyrants by Boris Johnson. What about our free societies? Is Justin Trudeau ever getting called a tyrant by Boris Johnson? Justin Trudeau, illegally, at this point, we can now say it, illegally took over the bank accounts of people who had anti-COVID beliefs, anti-COVID lockdown beliefs, the truckers and their organizers of a protest. Will we ever hear Boris Johnson talk of Justin Trudeau as a tyrant? No, we keep the tyrant term for what truly is the enemy of the neocon Westerners, like Boris Johnson. In his fawning, goof-a-wing, slack-jawed happiness at having a scoop, he betrayed his viewers and listeners around the world. I have seen no betrayal at all. What I've seen is given an opportunity for an event, for a unique event to happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise. I would have never gotten to know what will Putin do in front of a fair journalist from the West. Now we know. We've run this experiment, and I'm thankful to Tucker for having done it. He didn't ask tough questions. He didn't ask Putin why even now he is using the most brutal means of modern warfare to maim and murder innocent Ukrainian civilians. But that is completely false. False premise, Boris Johnson. First, we now have a comparison of what it looks like when a power decides to murder innocent civilians. And here's how it looks. detonation of residential neighborhoods. Airstrikes over civilian areas. Airstrikes over refugee civilian camps. Airstrikes over hospitals. Justification of the airstrike over hospitals by little investigatory videos that are meant for American consumption. Use of polyphosphorus onto civilian populations. Russia has done none of this. Russia is engaging in a traditional, almost, I would say, almost like old type of war, where they are at the lines, the front lines, and they're doing artillery drone works and some amount of air control and airstrikes. But all at the front line at this point, and all targeting military aims. We now know from Israel what it looks like to maim and murder innocent civilians. Now, you'll never get Boris Johnson to call out or to ask for tough questions to be asked of Bibi Netanyahu. Again, a double standard in how we treat the enemies of the neocons and the friends of the neocons. AI Pro says, what the fuck? Buka, The Hague, MH17, attacks on civilian targets like the theater in Mariupol, and other key issues. I'm not saying that civilians were not hurt by the Russian to Ukraine war. Definitely, it's impossible to make a case that not a single civilian has been hurt. But that is not what I was countering from Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson is claiming that he is currently, now, that Putin now is using the most brutal means of modern warfare to maim and murder innocent Ukrainian civilians. That is not true. The most brutal means, I can know for sure that it's not true, because I've seen the most brutal means of war in operation in Israel, and certainly they are more brutal towards civilians than Putin is against Ukraine. That is my claim, and that is a claim I do with confidence against the argument of Boris, not your argument on the regular chat, AI Pro. But thank you still for trying to counter my discourse. He didn't take him to task for the torture, the rapes, the blowing up of kindergartens. All of it wholly unnecessary and unprovoked. Well, I have no evidence at all that there is centrally ordered torture or rapes from the Russian side. The blowing up of kindergarten, I have no evidence that the Russian side intentionally struck kindergartens. So being taken to task on these things, the first is you have to ask yourself, what would an honest question about these things be from Tucker? And Tucker knows what would happen. If Tucker brings up, well, what about this kindergarten that exploded? Putin is going to tell you, we were not aiming a kindergarten. We have no evidence that we've ever aimed for a kindergarten. We were striking military targets, and it's possible that the air defense of Ukraine blew up our missiles and misdirected it toward the kindergarten. But we don't have controls as to where our strikes will land if you throw missiles at them. Now, so that's what happens if Tucker tries to go that route. So is it really worth to go that route? And I'm not even talking about the rape claim here, because there is no evidence that there has been rapes used as part of a war tactic by the Russian side. Simply no evidence. In fact, it is ridiculous how quick the claims of rape have been undermined as part of this war. And you would think that in a corrupt nation like Ukraine, it's super easy to get false claims going. But actually, the Ukraine side had to fire their own agent of supervision. It was a woman who was in charge of these this particular aspect, rape claims. And she had made too wild of a claim. They fired her the next day. So I'm not going to act like rapes have been happening if we have no evidence of it. Instead, he gasped fanboyishly at Putin's alleged erudition, boneheadedly accepting the Russian leader's mixture of semi-masticated Wikipedia and outright falsehood, such as the bizarre and ominous suggestion that Poland was somehow responsible for her own partition and destruction in 1939, as if Russia had no part in the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. So here there's a first claim that is technical in nature that we can give a review to. So the claim is that somehow Putin, the interview fails at representing the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, which states, which is a secret agreement between Germany and, well, secret from the perspective of the Western powers, it was secret, an agreement of non-aggression between Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union, which led to Nazi Germany invading half of Poland and the Soviet Union invading the other half. So they had agreed, basically, we're going to gank on them and you get this part, I get this part. Now, this deal has been mentioned in the interview, so it's extremely dishonest of Boris Johnson to act as if this wasn't mentioned. Let's have a look at this part of the interview and judge. So here the question is Boris Johnson's attack of Tucker justified in that there is a failure, there is a bizarre suggestion here that Poland was responsible for its own destruction? First, I don't think it's a fair representation of even the claim of Putin, so let's hear it.
Very good relationship with Russia. They insisted on that. After the 1917 revolution, the Bolsheviks sought to restore the statehood and the civil war began, including the hostilities with Poland. In 1921, peace with Poland was proclaimed, and under that treaty, the right bank of Dnieper River once again was given back to Poland.
So here he's making a whole story that these areas of land, they passed under many hands, and he's not making a moral statement up to now. He's making a historical description. Yeah, so this land was given to this guy, then this land was passed on to this people.
In 1939, after Poland cooperated.
Now we enter the point where perhaps there is a moral claim here. He says Poland cooperated with Hitler. Okay. That is not countered by Boris Johnson.
He did with Hitler. It did.
And Putin insists it did. So he wants to point out that Poland played a game with Hitler. They played on his side for a moment.
Collaborate with Hitler, you know? Hitler offered Poland peace and a treaty of friendship. An alliance demanding in return that Poland give back to Germany the so-called Danzig Corridor, which connected the bulk of Germany with East Prussia and Königsberg.
All right, so there is a peace agreement on the table that Hitler is offering to Poland, and he's offering a deal in which he would get back some land and Poland, there would be a non-aggression between the countries.
After World War I, this territory was...
Yeah, and that's another point. Landolt Guntram says, back then, practically every state cooperated with Hitler. Just look at the number of treaties signed. Yeah, yeah. By the standard that Boris Johnson is asking, every single European country has collaborated with Hitler in some form. That is quite funny. Even the Jews collaborated with Hitler.
Transferred to Poland, and instead of Danzig, a city of Gdansk emerged. Hitler asked them to give it amicably, but they...
So here we have a conflict between Hitler and Poland. There's this Gdansk city, and Hitler wants it, and Poland doesn't want to give it.
Refused.
Of course.
Still, they collaborated with Hitler and engaged together in the partitioning of Czechoslovakia.
So despite the small disagreement, they end up still conquering and partitioning a country as partners.
May I ask you, you're making the case that Ukraine, certainly parts of Ukraine, eastern Ukraine, is in effect Russia, has been for hundreds of years. Why wouldn't you just take it when you became president 24 years ago? You have nuclear weapons, they don't. If it's actually your land, why did you wait so long?
I'll tell you. I'm coming to that. This briefing is coming to an end. It might be boring, but it explains many things.
I just don't know how it's relevant.
Good. I'm so gratified that you appreciate that. Thank you. So, before World War II, Poland collaborated with Hitler, and...
So that's his big point. Poland collaborated with Hitler. That is not countered by Boris Johnson.
Although it did not yield to Hitler's demands, it still participated in the partitioning of Czechoslovakia together with Hitler, as the Poles had not given the Danzig corridor to Germany and went so far, pushing Hitler to start World War II by attacking them.
So that is the only claim that concerns Poland, that Boris Johnson seems to say, oh, that is absolutely scandalous to interpret that Poland has caused their own destruction. The problem here is that from a strict analytic point of view, you are always the cause of your own destruction, no matter what. You have always put yourself in some place with some degree of defensibility. That if someone comes, if someone reacts to your refusal to give up by attacking you, you are unable to defend yourself. In a way, you have caused your own destruction. But here, that is not even a deeply moral point that Putin is trying to make. He's making a historical causality point. He's trying to say, well, Poland didn't want to give on these points to Germany, and therefore it caused Hitler to have only one solution to get what he wanted, which is to attack Poland. He's not saying Poland should have or Poland shouldn't have. He's just saying this is what happened. They were confronted with a man who had a great ambition, and they couldn't please him with enough giving that he would stop on his ambition. So inevitably, yes, I think that his causal analysis is correct, that Poland caused Hitler to invade them. Now, of course, that doesn't mean it's legitimate. That doesn't mean Poland isn't a victim in that. And that's not what Putin has said. Putin has simply a realistic understanding of history. He understands there are certain forces. They exist. You have to deal with them. The way you react to them will change the outcomes. That doesn't mean these forces are your fault. Hitler was there. It was not the fault of Poland that Hitler was there. But they have handled Hitler in a certain way that pushed him to attack them first. I think it's a fair, realistic assessment.
Why was it Poland against whom the war started on 1st September 1939? Poland turned out to be uncompromising, and Hitler had nothing to do but start implementing his plans with Poland.
Here I think there is something in the translation that probably doesn't fully capture what Putin is saying. Not that I'm a Russian speaker, but I truly feel that under this fact that this flawed translation, I can detect what Putin means. He's saying Hitler had no choice to do this, given his plans. That is, if you grant that Hitler's dream was to have a big empire, a colonial empire of sorts within Europe, if you grant that this was Hitler's dream, then his only choice was to attack Poland. I think it's a totally fair assessment. It doesn't deserve the characterization that Boris has given of it, that Poland was somehow responsible for our own partition and destruction. And he says, as if Russia has had no part in the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. But there is no claim in this interview that Russia didn't have a part in it. In fact, the interview mentions it.
By the way, the USSR, I have read some archived documents, behaved very honestly. It asked Poland's permission to transit its troops through the Polish territory to help Czechoslovakia. But the then Polish foreign minister said that if the Soviet planes flew over Poland, they would be downed over the territory of Poland. But that doesn't matter. What matters is that the war began, and Poland fell prey to the policies it had pursued against Czechoslovakia.
So here, it's important to understand the subtlety here. He's saying that Poland fell prey. To what? To partitioning. Poland fell victim to the very thing that they had applied onto Czechoslovakia. So Poland, here he is saying, you know, sometimes you eat someone else, but sometimes then someone bigger than you will come back and eat you. So here Putin is laying his understanding of history, which he makes an explicit case for at some point in the interview, which is something I haven't mentioned in my analysis of yesterday. I find it pretty fascinating that Tucker asked him, do you see the forces of God at play in the ongoings of human history? And Putin says, honestly, no. The view of Putin is that we are, even if he believes in God, he believes there is a God, but he thinks that the arena of human fighting and human wars is a hyper-realistic arena, like that is not under the control of God. And that makes him kind of a scientific realist of some sort. He's a very pragmatic guy when he looks at history. So when he says Poland fell prey to the very same thing they did to the Czechoslovakia, what he means is that they had first colonized and dominated Czechoslovakia, and now they were a victim of the same thing. That is, when you accept to eat the smaller ones, you also accept that there's a bigger one behind you ready to eat you.
It's under the well-known Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact.
And so here he mentions the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact to say that they got a share of Poland from it.
Part of the territory, including Western Ukraine, was to be given to Russia.
And so there you go. He's making a case that Ukraine historically belonged to Russia. That's it. Other than this, it's an analysis of the kind, well, history is the way it is, and the bigger fish eats the smaller fish, and that's what it is. Then we continue with the letter of Boris Johnson. He did not challenge the ludicrous suggestion that the UK government persuaded the Ukrainians to fight on rather than surrender to Putin's tender mercies in the spring of 2022. That's an outright lie by Boris Johnson. And it's a lie precisely about his role. He should know this because he's the one who was at the heart of this request. This request has been documented by Foreign Affairs, where there's people on the Ukrainian side who are saying, yeah, we had a deal signed in April. It wasn't fully final. And that's exactly how Putin describes it. It was partly signed. they went to see Boris Johnson, and Boris Johnson told them, no, it's better if you keep fighting. Now, you might say, well, Jeff, what about Foreign Affairs? Is that a reliable journal? Can we still believe journalists that say they have anonymous sources? Okay, well, let's take public sources. Reuters, around this very time, June 2022, shows Boris Johnson. And Boris Johnson publicly proclaims Ukraine must not be pressured into a bad peace deal. That looks like the UK interfering with the willingness of Ukraine to engage in a peace deal. Now, read this again. This is a sentence from the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Ukraine must not be pressured into a bad peace deal. So here's the UK putting the brakes on a peace deal. Now, what do we have Boris Johnson claiming in writing today? That it's a ludicrous suggestion that the UK government persuaded the Ukrainians to fight on. Well, Boris, maybe your statement in Reuters persuaded them, but you certainly have enough public statements to demonstrate that at this time, you were against a peace deal, or you were trying to slow down on the peace, or you were certainly not on the side of pushing Ukraine toward peace. And as such, your statement today in that letter is a lie. You are trying to make it ludicrous, but it was your position back then. I don't believe you, Boris. As every member of the Ukrainian government will confirm from Zelensky down, nothing and no one could have stopped those lion-hearted Ukrainians from fighting for their country, and nothing will. Well, if nothing will, why were you sharing your opinions in June 2022, exactly at that time where this offer was on the table? That's nonsense, Boris. We can see your lies. There's enough public traces to see that you lie. In the last 2 years, Putin has conclusively demolished his own thesis. By his reckless and criminal violence, he has proved himself completely wrong. Wrong on what? He has taken over the parts of Ukraine that he had defined as targets for this operation. I don't see a failure. I don't see wrongness here on the side of Putin. He has revealed that Ukraine is not only a country, but a great one. And by his stupid miscalculation, he has helped engender a patriotic feeling that is stronger and more unquenchable than any in the world. The patriotic feeling fomented in Ukraine is a patriotic feeling based around faking to the West that Ukraine is approaching the values of the West with the whole LGBT stuff and having a trans spokesperson, while keeping it the reality that Ukraine is a backward society. The minute you don't have American funding, maintaining those LGBT soldiers and lesbian grenadiers in place, they're going to be some of the most oppressed LGBT across the whole planet. Because the Ukrainian population is not ready for Western openness. So it's absolute bullshit. This whole patriotic feeling is based around an imposed situation of displaying something to the West, of displaying a certain willingness to fight to the West as long as they're getting the money of the West. But of course, Tucker Carlson didn't make that point. He allowed the Russian leader to dilate for half an hour on the supposed historic non-existence of Ukraine, then gushed about Putin's encyclopedic knowledge. He didn't gush. He used this as a polite bridge. Sometimes in an interview, you want to comment and attack your interviewee, but you need to do it in such a polite form that it should pass as a compliment. That is exactly what Tucker did. And it's a clever way to, if you want to redirect your guest toward a more productive direction, Tucker, for some reason, had the impression that the interview was getting too long and that the speech of Putin was too historical and too unilateral. Now, personally, as a fan of intellectual TV, I don't care. But that was the state of mind of Tucker during the interview. So when he said to Putin, well, clearly you have an encyclopedic knowledge of Russia, but there's the but, which indicates that it was a fake compliment. It was a fake compliment to try to say to Putin, please get to the reason you invaded Ukraine. So no, it wasn't him gushing. It was him actually being as aggressive as you can be in an interview like this, to say to your interviewee, look, you're wasting people's time and it's getting boring. Can you stop with the encyclopedic knowledge and get to the answer to my question? Jane Kirill says, one funny fact, modern Ukraine was created by Hitler and Stalin after the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. Yes, I guess. Because the precise partition with Poland is the one from that pact. Not since George Galloway went to Baghdad and hailed the indefatigability of Saddam Hussein have we seen such a display of bum-sucking servility to a tyrant. In a way, it is unfair to blame Carlson for his abject performance. He was not there to challenge. He was just the medium, the sewer, the hose by which the untreated slurry of Putin's message could be spread where Putin wants it most, over the fertile heartlands of America. The message to the American people was simple. This is not your problem, Putin was saying. It's a European problem. Stay out of this conflict. Let me finish it off, and soon we can all be at peace. It is a message that the Americans have heard before. Well, it's that's the one part of the Boris Johnson writing that I agree with. Yes, it was untreated material, but sometimes it's what you need. Sometimes the treatment is a deception. Sometimes the little female Australian journalist and what she could have asked to Putin about the Pussy Riot, I don't give a shit. Sometimes the untreated position of someone is of higher quality than what these journalists are trying to make it, to make with it. Sometimes a Jordan Peterson delivering his thoughts is better than Jordan Peterson plus Cathy Newman saying, so you're saying that, so if I hear you correctly, what you mean is this. Yes, sometimes it is better. It's untreated and better. And yes, the message of Putin was, don't get involved in this. But what would be the message of America to Putin if Putin was trying to get into a war between America and Canada? Like, if America was like, oh yeah, you know what? There was a little disagreement around how big exactly Alaska was. Alaska should be a little bigger. Here, we're just going to invade the border here. And we chop 0.05% of the surface of Canada. But that's just what we think belongs to Alaska. What would be the message of Joe Biden or Donald Trump to Putin if Putin wanted to start funding the Canadian side of this conflict? I think it would be a very legitimate message to say, hey, this is none of your business. Don't get into it. In June 1940, shortly after Hitler invaded France, the newspaper of W.R. Hearst secured an interview with the German dictator, mainly because Hearst had long shown sympathies with Hitler. The chosen journalist was a German-American called von Wiegand, who had already conducted several positive interviews with the Führer. Von Weygand was duly ushered into a captured French chateau where he found Hitler, von Ribbentrop, and others. And with the help of detailed notes that he had prepared, Hitler gave the U.S. newspaper reporter his uninterrupted historical wisdom. "This is about Europe, not America," said Hitler. "The Americans have nothing to fear from Nazi Germany and no reason to interfere. He didn't particularly want to conquer Paris," he said. "He didn't even want to be waging war on the European continent. He just wanted to vindicate the ancient rights of the German-speaking peoples." Does that sound familiar? Exactly. Like Hitler, Putin now drones on about the alleged injustices suffered by speakers of his native tongue. Listen to Putin talking about Russophones in the Donbass or Hungarophones in Western Ukraine, and you can hear Hitler talking about the Sudetenland or Alsace-Lorraine. Well, the thing is, every single person who gets into a war will want a casuist belli, a beautiful cause, a cause that is fair and that can be defended as honorable. We cannot say just because Putin has a reason to enter war that necessarily looks like Hitler. I mean, at this point, it's down to the level of, well, Hitler was drinking water, you know, and you drink water too. Well, every single American president who got into a war with any country always had their own causes, sometimes based entirely on lies. And so I'm absolutely open to hearing Putin and his justification narrative, where he sees it as a problem of demographics, basically, of the people who belong to Russia. He sees it as the problem of, hey, if Russian-speaking people had been well-treated in these countries, we wouldn't have had to invade. But they were pushed, they were genocided against, they were targeted with political repression and military repression, and so we had to invade. That doesn't make it Hitlerian or fascistic just because he has an excuse for his war. To the contrary, every person who engages in a just war will have an excuse, will have a reason. And then it's everyone's judgment to decide if they side with it. Phantom of the Odyssey says, "You would think these countries would wake up to the agendas by now. Ukraine would probably be better off as part of Russia. And yet they choose the trans immigration displacement drug culture stuff that America pushes." Yes, and the message of Putin, I think, is we would even tolerate just an independent Ukraine. We don't mind there being an independent Ukrainian people and interacting with them at equal standing. The problem we have is a America-submitted Ukraine. If you're not going to use your liberty and you're going to give it away to our enemies, and you're going to make yourself a stand-in, an outpost for the enemy, then you become dangerous to us. Then your lack of a spinal cord, your lack of a standing, of a home desire, of self-determination, is what we take issue with. That was the message of Putin. And I reject in entirety the Boris Johnson letter. A couple of news before we close the show. Hugh Mungus was saying on the Telegram, he sent me this message. "JF, consider this scenario. Imagine a man has two sons. One son has two children, the other son has one child. The grandfather in question is making estate plans to divide his property among his three grandchildren. Assuming all other variables being equal, big assumption, but it's an intellectual exercise, what is the optimal way to divide his property? All three grandchildren receive a 33% share of the estate. The two children of son number one receive 25% shares, while the only child of the second son receives 50%, the argument for option A is that it is equal. The argument for option B is that option A punishes the descendants of the son with fewer children. This happens to be a very common debate in estate planning. Curious to hear your thoughts. That's a very interesting question. The first thing you have to say is you ask for the optimal way. The optimal way will depend on your definition of optimal. What are you trying to maximize? If you want to maximize evolutionary fitness, option B is a bad idea. Like, if you believe that somehow this money will serve more baby making, and therefore that it is causal of evolutionary fitness, and if you also believe that evolutionary fitness should be rewarded, option B is a problem. Because option B, you're absolutely correct, punishes the descendants of the son with fewer children. No, it punishes the descendants of the son with more children. Look, the descendants of the son with more children, they get only 25% each. The descendants of the son with a single child receive 50%. So option B, the problem is that it punishes high baby-making families. Now, the problem is high baby-making is evolutionary fitness. So if you wanted to be very mathematical and technical about it, the person who wants to use his inheritance to maximize evolutionary fitness would have two considerations to take. One, how do I direct this money to have the most babies down the line I can? Now, is it one generation? No. Is it two generations? No. Is it three generations? No. You would have, if you were in an ideal mathematical situation, you would have to know how many babies you have at the infinite generation scale. So you would have to project into the future billions of years and say, well, ultimately, which one of these babies led to billions of babies? Now, that would be the ideal mathematical situation. But here you find yourself with consideration number two. Your money cannot have impact in the world as long as you don't distribute it. And so if you were to wait for infinite amount of time before giving your money, that would be the same as not giving the money ever. And therefore, your inheritance would serve nothing. So by making a trade-off between these two considerations, you can find the optimal evolutionary way to dedicate your wealth to your inheritance. And that corresponds to, what is the moment at which my money is as its maximal causality on the ability of my descendants to have babies? So, for example, if I know that I'm in a situation where my wealth is $1 billion in 2024, I know that if I invest it, it will be worth, even in inflation-adjusted purchasing power, it will be worth $5 billion down the line of 20 years. Maybe it will be worth $10 billion down the line of 50 years. Then, as long as this number is growing, you should be interested at keeping the investment fund and dropping it on further and further descendants into the future. Once you have, now there is a counter to this, which is everyone knows that wealth management funds do not survive the century scale. Even people who are mega, mega billionaires, they know that their wealth will get diluted after their death, and it's not even going to be long. So the reality is, even if the theoretical mathematical calculation sends you hundreds of years in the future, you understand that your wealth will not survive hundreds of years. And then you bring it back to, okay, well, my wealth can probably be useful maybe down the line 20 years, maybe down the line 40 years. Now, with Bitcoin, who knows? Maybe down the line 1,000 years, maybe. But that's the bet you have to make. So once you have chosen what is the point in time at which my wealth has the most causal effect, considering its potential as an investment and its potential for dilution, let's say you agree that it's at the grandchildren generation that you're going to have the most effect. That means your consideration number two has converged toward a decision of 40 years. That is 42 generations down the line. When my grandchildren reach 18 years old, that will be the moment at which I give my money. Then you have to go back to your first consideration. So now that you've set up that you've decided that you would only know the second generation evolutionary fitness, you have to attribute the money proportional to the evolutionary fitness. And the money proportional to the evolutionary fitness is option A. All three grandchildren receive 33% share of the estate. That way you have maximized the number two causal effect of your money, and you have maximized, there's a term in trading for this. There's a term in trading for equal allocation to equal probabilistic outcome. Maybe someone on the chat knows what I'm talking about. There's on Investopedia, they mention equal weight investing or the martingale strategy. But there is a shorter word. There is a catchy word. You know, when you say, okay, I have 50% chance of this, 50% chance of that, I'm going to bet 50% of my money on the fifth. Matching. Matching is the term. So in gambling, they call this matching. In our case, we would call it matching to the evolutionary fitness. And your match is 33, 33, 33. Because you don't know at the grandchildren level, will they have different amounts of children? Now, if you want to add a prior to your matching, you might soften a little bit of that decision. That prior might go as follows, and we could call it the NTB option. The NTB option is, instead of sending less money to the children who were part of numerous families, I'm going to make an assumption. I'm going to make an assumption that if you were part of a larger family, you are more likely to have the genes that will lead you to have more babies. And so here you could launch yourself into a a probabilistic call about the future. And you could say, My son who has had two children is more likely that these two children will have two children each. And it's more likely that the son who had one child, his son will probably have one child too. So now if you want to get into this calculation, what you're going to do is you're going to start taking money from the 33% of the child in the small family and redistribute it in the larger family. You could decide, I'm going to take 50% of his money. So let me pull here a notepad, maybe. Here. So let's say you had 33%. to one child, and then 33% to one child, 33% to one child, and these two children come from the same father. Now, you want to say, I want to take a certain percentage of what goes into from the small families, and it could be between 0 and 100%. You could do a full rebalance. In the case of a full rebalance, what you get is 0, 50, 50. But let's say you just want to do a 50% rebalance. Then that child ends up with 11.5% to the lonely child. And then you have the remainder, which is 88.9 divided by 2, 44.25%, and 44.25% to the two-child family. And the reasoning for this, we can call it the C option or NTB, is I want to reward evolutionary success, which was already the option A. And I believe that larger families lead to babies with larger families. There you go. You have the full math of it. If you want to be radical and hardcore, like, even I am not that much of an asshole. Like, I'll say, okay, you know what? Maybe the lone child, maybe my lone grandchildren will make a family of 10. So maybe I should invest in him as much. But if you really want to be hardcore and really want to be genetic and rational in your thinking, the only rational option is the full rebalance. But that is so unjust. Because imagine you have a descendant who's part of a family of 6, but then his brother had a family of 7. Now you're going to give all that money to the family of 7 just because they had 7, and you're going to give 0 to the family of 6. You're going to have a bunch of people pissed off. And also, you know, it opens up to exploitation. You could argue that the radical approach is openable to exploitation. What if this guy, knowing that the other has stopped making babies, try to just make one more baby? And what if his babies are actually cheaper to make? What if they tend to become more gay? Then is it really an additional child in your line of descent if he's gay? Not really. So you're kind of also rewarding anti-evolutionary dysgenic trends if you go too harsh. Which is why I would go back to option A or something close to option A. And if you want to give a little bit of an evolutionary boost, I would go perhaps for a 10% rebalance strategy. So what does it look like? We take 3.3% out of 33. So we are at 29.7%. We distribute the rest among the two other children. We give them 35.15. That gives you a little evolutionary boost for large families, but it doesn't leave people hanging who are in smaller families. That would be a reasonable outcome. A silver spider says, new guy, laughing my ass off. Imagine comparing JF to some black guy in the hood in America when most people on Earth couldn't tell a Ukrainian and Russian guy apart. Okay, could I? Talking about the hood, we have someone here enriching the metro, hitting all the women one after the other. He's right here. He starts by a little hit. Oh, he's a little more aggressive on this one. He slaps this one in the back of the head. Slaps this one. Oh my God. That is why you don't want to be standing there isolated from the world with a Walkman, an MP3 player, and not being aware of what's happening in your surrounding. Kanye West reveals his album is delayed because The Weeknd's label refuses to clear his verse, likely due to Ye's lyrics bragging about being a bipolar anti-Semite. So yeah, Kanye West wants the liberty to speak, but at the same time, he's still dealing with mainstream labels. The Weeknd's label, so that's The Weeknd, the black guy who won some award, I remember. I don't know much about his music, but he's named The Weeknd. And somehow they have accepted to publish Kanye. That sounds very surprising. That sounds very surprising. Least demonic abortionist. I didn't know this guy. I had seen this video where he's kind of annoying a Christian who's praying for him to stop being an abortionist.
Sir, you gotta repent, sir. You gotta repent, sir, for murdering babies.
Why?
Because it's a sin before God.
Why?
Well,
stinky breath.
Yeah. Why?
So he's kind of playing the devil. He's like, you don't know how evil I am, but kind of in a sarcastic way, liberal way.
That's pretty evil of you, sir.
Yeah, I am.
And I hope and pray that you...
Yeah.
Well, that's what you do to babies, huh?
Yeah, I love it.
You love it, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I hope that you come to Christ, sir.
Oh, I'd never go to Christ.
I hope that you come to Christ,
no,
sir.
No, I don't go to Christ.
Yeah, you...
I don't listen to Christ.
You will have a darkened heart, sir.
I do have a darkened heart, yeah.
You have a darkened heart.
I do very, very much
and
so.
You will stand before God in judgment
yes,
day.
Yes, I will, every day.
You will stand before God in judgment
yes,
day.
Yes, I will, every day.
All of the babies that
I
you
love
have
it.
Killed.
I love it.
Yeah, keep tearing the babies
yeah,
apart.
Yeah, I will.
Keep tearing the babies
I
apart.
I will.
Keep tearing what? The babies yes. apart. Yeah. Yeah, sir, the babies, their blood screams from the ground.
Amidst the normal garage staples of the recently deceased doctor.
Now, I didn't know that he turned out to be actually stacking baby parts in his home.
Dr. Ulrich Klopfer, recycle bins, tires, and ladders were boxes. Boxes behind the luggage, as high as the windows. Boxes stacked amongst buckets and tools up to the ceiling there. Some of them wilting, some of them rotting, all of them numbered and cataloged. All of them containing fetal remains, 2,246 of them in all.
Sir, you gotta...
What? So the guy wasn't just kidding around being kind of devilish. The guy was actually stacking on baby parts, hundreds of them. Wow. I didn't expect this from abortionists. New guy says, now let's discuss 9-month term abortions. We are returning to people claiming that Margot Robbie is mid. She's mid, says involuntary celibate. Someone was saying the same man who think Margot Robbie is the most beautiful woman in the world is the same man who say black women look masculine because of our facial structure. No, I mean, it's a complicated question, but Margot Robbie is extremely beautiful, no doubt. I refuse to rate this woman as a mid. Margot Robbie is among the most beautiful actress at her peak. I understand that in Barbie she's getting old a little bit, but Margot Robbie is an example of extremely beautiful woman. I mean, in The Wolf of Wall Street, she is close to perfection. I get it that she has a weird jaw, but it's not a super ugly jaw either. It is kind of defined and masculine, maybe a little bit. She is not a perfect beauty, but she is a 9, 10 out of 10, definitely. And this guy, I don't like him. There's various people who take various attitudes against or for this guy. Some people claim he owned her. I don't think he owned her. I think he's is acting very weird.
Can I ask you one more question?
Fire away, honey.
Okay. if you have only one place in your heart for one woman, or you want to have one woman in your heart, I think you said, why don't you just commit to one and choose to be faithful to her?
I'm just not wired that way. I spent my whole 20s trying to fix myself. I thought
something
was wrong with
me. You're a man of self-control. You work out. You do business.
Yeah.
You can possess your own power and do direct it the way you want to direct it.
It's not how I am. It's not how I am.
You think that might be a limited mindset?
I think it's none of your business, but I don't want you to think I'm triggered by you. I'm not.
Okay.
I saw somebody say that, and I think that's interesting. I think you're annoying, but I'm not triggered. You know what I'm saying? No, you are. You're annoying in like this goody two shoes type way, and that's fine. I'm going to live my life on my terms, unapologetically, like true.
Yeah, but he is holding a contradictory discourse that he wants to give himself to a single. To a single woman, but at the same time he won't, and he will just continue acting according to his animalistic instinct, which tell him to gather multiple women. I think that if you are in a situation where you are able to get faithful women to commit to you, you would be absolutely ridiculous not to reciprocate. I'm all for spray and pray. In the context where you cannot find a faithful woman. But once you find a faithful woman, don't make me hate men as much as I hate women. Because you have to show yourself at the occasion. And when the occasion shows, stop complaining and take her. Because then, yes, I will start making a red pill show about unreliable men. Can you believe this? Rodi Lassid says, a real woman of word, she will not accept him sleeping around. That's something I was discussing with my girlfriend a few days ago. I don't comment on unreliable men much because I believe that there is a particular current social ill around woman decision-making, dating, and the liberal mentality of woman. But I absolutely know that there are unreliable men out there. And when I look at this clip, I'm reminded that, yeah, you know, they're only 20 to 30% of the marriage breakers, but they exist. And it's a mass of people that should be criticized. It's just that sometimes my show aligns very much with fixing the biggest problems I perceive of society. And I think that the biggest problems in terms of quantity lies on the female side on the unreliability aspect and the lack of a legalistic system to keep people together. But yeah, I totally know that there are unreliable males out there. And it's not because I don't cover it often in my show that I'm deluded about it. I know they exist. And one day it might be the time to call them out. But as long as we are in a world where the option of loyalty isn't even available, I cannot go after these guys because these guys aren't causing the social harms that females are causing in the way they vote, in the way they change the legal structure of society toward one where commitment doesn't exist anymore. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love. I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you.